Chapter 5. I had to struggle with him pretty hard to bring him to his senses, panting all the while, for he gave me a breather. Sergeant, I am Gil Davis. Treachery. Pirates on the island. The last words brought him round, and he took his hands off. I have seen two of them within this minute, said one. And so I told him what I had told Harry Charker. His soldierly, though tyrannical, head was clear in an instant. He didn't waste one word, even of surprise. Order the guard, says he, to draw off quietly into the fort. They called the enclosure I have before mentioned the fort, though it was not much of that. Then get you to the fort as quick as you can, rouse up every soul there, and fasten the gate. I will bring in all those who are at the signal hill. If we are surrounded, before we can join you, you must make a sally, and cut us out if you can. The word among our men is, women and children. Apostrophe, he burst away, like fire going before the wind over dry reeds. He roused up the seven men who were off duty, and had them bursting away with him, before they know they were not asleep. I reported orders to Charker, and ran to the fort, as I have never run at any other time in all my life. No, not even in a dream. The gate was not fast, and had no good fastening. Only a double wooden bar, a poor chain, and a bad lock. Those, I secured as well as they could be secured in a few seconds by one pair of hands, and so ran to that part of the building where Miss Marion lived. I called to her loudly by her name until she answered. I then called loudly all the names I knew: Mrs. Macy, Miss Marion's married sister, Mr. Macy, Mrs. Venning, Mr. and Mrs. Fisher, even Mr. and Mrs. Portage. Then I called out, all you gentlemen here, get up and defend the place. We are caught in a trap. Pirates have landed. We are attacked. At the terrible word, pirates. For, those villains had done such deeds in those seas as never can be told in writing, and can scarcely be so much as thought of. Cries, and screams rose up from every part of the place. Quickly lights moved about from window to window, and the cries moved about with them, and men, women, and children came flying down into the square. I remarked to myself, even then, what a number of things I seemed to see at once. I noticed Mrs. Macy coming towards me, carrying all her three children together. I noticed Mr. Portage in the greatest terror, in vain trying to get on his diplomatic coat, and Mr. Kitten respectfully tying his pocket handkerchief over Mrs. Portage's nightcap. I noticed Mrs. Belted run out screaming, and shrink upon the ground near me, and cover her face in her hands, and lie all of a bundle, shivering. But, what I noticed with the greatest pleasure was, the determined eyes with which those men of the mine, that I had thought fine gentlemen, came round me with what arms they had. To the full as cool, and resolute as I could be, for my life and for my soul too, into the bargain. The chief person being Mr. Macy, I told him how the three men of the guard would be at the gate directly, if they were not already there, and how Sergeant Bruce and the other seven were gone to bring in the outlying part of the people of Silver Store. I next urged him, for the love of all who were dear to him, to trust no Sambo, and, above all, if he could got any good chance at Christian George King, not to lose it, but to put him out of the world. I will follow your advice to the letter, Davis, says he. What next? My answer was, I think, sir, I would recommend you next, to order down such heavy furniture and lumber as can be moved, and make a barricade within the gate. That's good again, says he. Will you see it done? I'll willingly help to do it, says I, unless or until my superior, Sergeant Bruce, gives me other orders. He shook me by the hand, and having told off some of his companions to help me, bestirred himself to look to the arms and ammunition. A proper, quick, brave, steady, ready gentleman. One of their three little children was deaf and dumb. Miss Marion had been from the first with all the children, soothing them, and dressing them, poor little things. They had been brought out of their beds, and making them believe that it was a game of play, so that some of them were now even laughing. I had been working hard with the others at the barricade, and had got up a pretty good breastwork within the gate. Bruce and the seven men had come back, bringing in the people from the Signal Hill, and had worked along with us. But, I had not so much as spoken a word to Bruce, nor had Bruce so much as spoken a word to me, for we were both too busy. The breastwork was now finished, and I found Miss Marion at my side, with a child in her arms. Her dark hair was fastened round her head with a band. She had a quantity of it, and it looked even richer and more precious, put up hastily out of her way, than I had seen it look when it was carefully arranged. She was very pale, but extraordinarily quiet and still. "Dear good Davis," said she, "I have been waiting to speak one word to you." I turned to her directly. If I had received a musket ball in the heart, and she had stood there, I almost believe I should have turned to her before I dropped. "This pretty little creature," said she, kissing the child in her arms, who was playing with her hair and trying to pull it down, "cannot hear what we say, can hear nothing. I trust you so much, and have such great confidence in you, that I want you to make me a promise." "What is it, miss?" "That if we are defeated, and you are absolutely sure of my being taken, you will kill me." "I shall not be alive to do it, miss. I shall have died in your defense before it comes to that. They must step across my body, to lay a hand on you. But, if you are alive, you brave soldier." How she looked at me. "And if you cannot save me from the pirates, living, you will save me, dead. Tell me so." "Well," I told her, "I would do that at the last, if all else failed." She took my hand, my rough, coarse hand, and put it to her lips. She put it to the child's lips, and the child kissed it. I believe I had the strength of half a dozen men in me, from that moment, until the fight was over. All this time, Mr. Commissioner Portage had been wanting to make a proclamation to the pirates, to lay down their arms and go away, and everybody had been hustling him about and tumbling over him, while he was calling for pen and ink to write it with. Mrs. Portage, too, had some curious ideas about the British respectability of her nightcap, which had as many frills to it, growing in layers one inside another, as if it was a white vegetable of the artichoke sort, and she wouldn't take the nightcap off, and would be angry when it got crushed by the other ladies who were handing things about, and, in short, she gave as much trouble as her husband did. But, as we were now forming for the defense of the place, they were both poked out of the way with no ceremony. The children and ladies were got into the little trench which surrounded the silver house. We were afraid of leaving them in any of the light buildings, lest they should be set on fire, and we made the best disposition we could. There was a pretty good store, in point of amount, of tolerable swords and cutlasses. Those were issued. There were, also, perhaps a score or so of spare muskets. Those were brought out. To my astonishment, little Mrs. Fisher, that I had taken for a doll and a baby, was not only very active in that service, but volunteered to load the spare arms. "For, I understand it well," says she, cheerfully, without a shake in her voice. "I am a soldier's daughter and a sailor's sister, and I understand it too," says Miss Marion, "just in the same way." Steady and busy behind where I stood, those two beautiful and delicate young women fell to handling the guns, hammering the flints, looking to the locks, and quietly directing others to pass up powder and bullets from hand to hand, as unflinching as the best of tried soldiers. Sergeant Bruce had brought in word that the pirates were very strong in numbers, over 100, was his estimate, and that they were not, even then, all landed. For, he had seen them in a very good position on the further side of the Signal Hill, evidently waiting for the rest of their men to come up. In the present pause, the first we had had since the alarm, he was telling this over again to Mr. Macy, when Mr. Macy suddenly cried, "Are the signal? Nobody has thought of the signal. We knew of no signal, so we could not have thought of it." "What signal may you mean, sir?" says Sergeant Bruce, looking sharp at him. "There is a pile of wood upon the Signal Hill. If it could be lighted, which never has been done, yet it would be a signal of distress to the mainland. Charker cries, directly. Sergeant Bruce, dispatch me on that duty. Give me the two men who were on guard with me tonight, and I'll light the fire, if it can be done. And if it can't, Corporal Mr. Macy strikes in. Look at these ladies and children, sir, says Charker. I'd sooner light myself than not try any chance to save them. We gave him a hurrah, it burst from us, come of it what might, and he got his two men, and was let out at the gate, and crept away. I had no sooner come back to my place from being one of the party to handle the gate, than Miss Marion said in a low voice behind me, Davis, will you look at this powder? This is not right. I turned my head. Christian George King again, and treachery again. Seawater had been conveyed into the magazine, and every grain of powder was spoiled. Stay a moment, said Sergeant Bruce, when I had told him, without causing a movement in a muscle of his face. Look to your pouch, my lad. You Tom Packer, look to your pouch, confound you. Look to your pouches, all you Marines. The same artful savage had got at them, somehow or another, and the cartridges were all unserviceable. Hum, says the sergeant. Look to your loading, men. You are right so far? Yes, we were right so far. Well, my lads, and gentlemen all, says the sergeant, this will be a hand-to-hand affair, and so much the better. He treated himself to a pinch of snuff, and stood up, square-shouldered and broad-chested, in the light of the moon which was now very bright, as cool as if he was waiting for a play to begin. He stood quiet, and we all stood quiet, for a matter of something like half an hour. I took notice from such whispered talk as there was, how little we, that the silver did not belong to, thought about it, and how much the people, that it did belong to, thought about it. At the end of the half hour, it was reported from the gate, that Charker and the two were falling back on us, pursued by about a dozen. Sally. Gate party, under Gil Davis, says the sergeant, and bring them in. Like men, now. We were not long about it, and we brought them in. Don't take me, says Charker, holding me round the neck, and stumbling down at my feet, when the gate was fast. Don't take me near the ladies or the children, Gil. They had better not see death, till it can't be helped. They'll see it soon enough. Harry, I answered, holding up his head. Comrade. He was cut to pieces. The signal had been secured by the first pirate party that landed. His hair was all singed off, and his face was blackened with the running pitch from a torch. He made no complaint of pain, or of anything. Goodbye, old chap, was all he said, with a smile. I've got my death. And death ain't life. Is it, Gil? Having helped to lay his poor body on one side, I went back to my post. Sergeant Bruce looked at me, with his eyebrows a little lifted. I nodded. Close up here, men, and gentlemen all, said the sergeant. A place too many, in the line. The pirates were so close upon us at this time, that the foremost of them were already before the gate. More and more came up with a great noise, and shouting loudly. When we believed from the sound that they were all there, we gave three English cheers. The poor little children joined, and were so fully convinced of our being at play, that they enjoyed the noise, and were heard clapping their hands in the silence that followed. Our disposition was this, beginning with the rear. Mrs. Venning, holding her daughter's child in her arms, sat on the steps of the little square trench surrounding the silver house, encouraging and directing those women and children as she might have done in the happiest and easiest time of her life. Then, there was an armed line, under Mr. Macy, across the width of the enclosure, facing that way, and having their backs towards the gate, in order that they might watch the walls, and prevent our being taken by surprise. Then there was a space of 8 or 10 feet deep, in which the spare arms were, and in which Miss Marion and Mrs. Fisher, their hands and dresses blackened with the spoilt gunpowder, worked on their knees, tying such things as knives, old bayonets, and spearheads, to the muzzles of the useless muskets. Then, there was a second armed line, under Sergeant Bruce, also across the width of the enclosure, but facing to the gate. Then came the breastwork we had made, with a zigzag way through it for me, and my little party to hold good in retreating, as long as we could, when we were driven from the gate. We all knew that it was impossible to hold the place long, and that our only hope was in the timely discovery of the plot by the boats, and in their coming back. I and my men were now thrown forward to the gate. From a spy hole, I could see the whole crowd of pirates. There were Malays among them, Dutch, Maltese, Greeks, Sambos, Negroes, and convict Englishmen from the West India Islands. Among the last, him with the one eye and the patch across the nose. There were some Portuguese too, and a few Spaniards. The captain was a Portuguese, a little man with very large earrings under a very broad hat, and a great bright shawl twisted about his shoulders. They were all strongly armed, but like a boarding party, with pikes, swords, cutlasses, and axes. I noticed a good many pistols, but not a gun of any kind among them. This gave me to understand that they had considered that a continued roll of musketry might perhaps have been heard on the mainland. Also, that for the reason that fire would be seen from the mainland they would not set the fort in flames and roast us alive, which was one of their favorite ways of carrying on. I looked about for Christian George King, and if I had seen him, I am much mistaken, if he would not have received my one round of ball cartridge in his head. But, no Christian George King was visible. A sort of a wild Portuguese demon, who seemed either fierce mad or fierce drunk, but, they all seemed one or the other came forward with the black flag, and gave it a wave or two. After that, the Portuguese captain called out in shrill English, "I say you." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.